Welcome to the Strong Voice podcast, a podcast committed to bringing you the voice of the brave and the pioneers who are stepping up to follow their true path and creating some positive ripples in the world as they do so. I'm Kate Strong, your host, and we cover a wide spectrum of topics because life is full of variety. What I've learned along my journey is that we gain so much more inspiration from listening to different paths and perspectives. And if you're like me, working hard today with some fun thrown in to ensure tomorrow is brighter, then you'll gain a lot from this podcast series. Welcome to the Strong Voice podcast. This podcast is committed to bringing you the voice of the brave and the pioneers who are stepping up to follow their true path and creating some positive ripples in the world as they do so. My name is Kate Strong. I'm your host for the podcast. And today I'm really looking forward to chatting with Asha Jay. You've had so many iterations of your life. I don't know how to explain you, but I suppose the simplest way is you're an explorer turned entrepreneur working in the tech industry to magnify your message, as well as bringing loads of other people together. So thanks so much for joining me.
Real pleasure to be here, Kate. Look forward to having this conversation.
Yeah, so share with me, because I mean, I did a quick Google and you've been a designer, an artist, a conservationist. You've traveled the world.
Yeah, stand-up comedian, the whole nine yards. I think, you know, life is too short to not be everything you aspire to be. And there's just so many layers to our self-expression that can happen in phases and cycles. And I've always pursued what I felt truly called to, and whatever conduit allows me to deliver most effectively in that time, I pursue that. So in the initial phases of it, since I had a background in fashion designing, branding, marketing, and merchandising on 7th Avenue, New York City, I had those skill sets available to me on the ready to deploy towards raising awareness about sustainable development, conservation goals around the world. And as I matured in my own self and the ways in which I was feeling more comfortable expressing my alignment with the world around, I decided to pursue stand-up comedy because that's another way to reach a demographic that you won't reach necessarily through billboards in Times Square. And then, you know, but those people can be reached on a true drink minimum through humor. So it's absolutely essential, I think, to try and get as many people on board and in the conversation, because it's so easy to preach to the choir. And it happens particularly in the area of wildlife conservation, sustainable development, climate change. Most of these topics end up being marginalized and happening behind closed doors with an elite few who can speak in that vernacular. They're comfortable knowing and talking about it, whether it's through the filter of science, policy, or legislation, like looking at it from legal recourses. And that's not available to the masses. The average Joe doesn't wake up and think, hey, I should tune into C-SPAN and listen to what the policymakers are talking about today in regards to how we're going to change our current paradigm and industries as it pertains to climate change. Rather, they're more likely to say, I need a reprieve. I've had a really rubbish day and I'm going to go sit in a comedy cellar and enjoy a pint with some humor. You know, and if you can reach them there on something that matters for their own well-being and for the well-being of their children and the next generation, then I think that should be capitalized on. And that's why I've had so many iterations of self, because I'm like, you know, okay, there's a poetry slam happening. Let's go participate in poetry, you know, whatever it takes, really. And if you can be creative and you're willing to apply yourself, I think sky's the limit. And right now, technology has become my calling. Because I think the best way to democratize access, and that's been the primary aspiration for me, is to truly allow people to have access. Because when the masses can get behind something, when they can internalize it and genuinely begin to love and care about things that matter for their well-being, because we are in an interdependent biosphere that's super fragile and needs to be cared for. So we all need to step up as stewards. No one person can switch off and say, hey, I don't care what's happening in my backyard. And together we shift the narrative, right? So I think in that regard, if I can really allow everyone to know what's happening in a way that's accessible to them, by which I mean, what is the vocabulary through which we're delivering that message? Is it something that they can recognize and feel is familiar to them? Or is it being fed to them in a way that it sounds like data and almost sterile, and therefore you distance yourself from receiving it? And so that's really what I'm looking to do through tech, is to scale impact and scale access to this information that has thus far been, you know, made available to a select few behind closed doors in on a need to know basis or within a academic language that is only familiar to that those few. And that's something that I believe needs to change, because consumers are the largest demographic. And as consumers, we exercise a tremendous impact on the world. And every dollar spent is actually a vote being made towards a paradigm that we're perpetuating. And that needs to shift. And the only way that shifts is when people come into the know and make the change in their own personal lives.
Yeah.
So yeah, hence tech.
Totally powerful. I'm really on board with what you're saying. And something you brought up was, a lot of times, because we are disassociated from the message, it's the others. It's the others who are creating the problem, and it's the others who need to solve it. And we do need to start realizing that every single step I take, every dollar I spend, every choice I do or don't do is impacting the world. And I need to be responsible as much as I put it on the others as well.
Yeah. And the other part of it is that businesses, especially in America with the capitalistic model, which has pervaded across the world. So capitalism is not isolated to the free market and the free world. It's across the board now. And everybody's subscribing to it because they think it's a symbol of progress, as a symbol of liberty and expression of self and economic freedom, right? And so everyone's like, yep, go capitalism. Let's just get behind this bandwagon. But it being unchecked and not having a deeper consciousness behind how it allows for people to show up, the framing itself is so biased against looking at resources is anything but extractive modalities, right? You're always looking at it through the sieve of I can take without ever giving it back and without ever fostering it. So it's not cradle to cradle. It's not like nature. It's actually the most unnatural system is to constantly take without giving back. Yet here we are doing that and scaling it and saying that that's progress. That's something that's going to be good for us. And it briefly seems like a blessing because it gives you such a great bottom line to impress shareholders with. But what you're forgetting about is stakeholders, by which I mean there are some communities out there, some wildlife organism or ecosystem that is paying the cost, that's subsidizing the fact that we are making this for cheap, that we're doing this effectively and efficiently at the cost of something that we're not accounting for. So that blindsided areas of these computations is the part that I want to cast a light on and bring into focus so that we stop taking things for granted. Because those things that we erode into ultimately boomerang on us. And then we're like, oh yeah, we got hit by another hurricane that we didn't think was going to come. But how did we not think that that was going to happen when butterfly effect is the first thing we've all learned about, right? So what you do in one area, of course, affects other regions in the world because we're in a single biosphere. It's not like isolated as it is in our minds. So for me, when I'm looking at it, it's also about empowering brands to understand that if you're given the rights in the model of capitalism to show up as almost a citizen, it's showing up in the right of personhood rights, right? And if it has that much clout to flex and social presence to flex, then it should take accountability in the same regard that an individual should. Yet it's not. It passes the buck to individuals and says, hey, it's not my problem that my toothpaste is in this packaging. It's what you asked for because it's the most convenient way for you to carry it home. But that's just passing the buck of responsibility. And so for me, the tech paradigm also can hold brands accountable. So it's both B2B and B2C. That's what I'm focused on, is that the marketplace needs to change at source level. It's not about the symptoms, but about the very source of it. And for that, there has to be a real awareness of why things are not working. And to truly allow for the change that is going to affect bottom line, because shifting from shareholder capitalism to stakeholder capitalism is going to affect how you've shown up thus far. And it's going to look painful. It is that transformation is going to take a lot out of each entity because it is a system shift. You know, it's a core shift. And that's not something that happens easily. That sort of metamorphosis doesn't happen easily within a human being. It's going to be exponentially harder for a corporation to do that too. So have the compassion and the empathy for the fact that these big systems need to shift, but they have to shift because we've gone past the time where you can make 10-year commitments in passing and not honor them. Most of the conversations I sit in on with sustainable brand conferences happen to be about how 10 years from now, we will change the way we're showing up. You know, we're going to address our plastic impact. We're going to address our supply chain and our sourcing, and we will be more committed to fair wages, whatever not, right? So they're making these commitments, but it's 2 years from now, 5 years from now. But just think about it on a personal level. Like, it's easy to say that this is the way with B2B or even when businesses show up to the market space for consumers. But if you were in a personal relationship with a man and a person shows up in your life and says, hey, I know I'm being incredibly toxic and what I do to you affects you enormously on a day-to-day basis, but I will commit to changing in 10 years. I will commit to like being less abusive emotionally, less abuse. You know what I mean? Would you stay in that relationship? No. Yet consumers, we stay in these relationships forever with brands that are systematically abusive toward us. And it's, we just don't see it. We don't perceive it. We don't know why it's happening the way it's happening. We don't think we have a choice in the matter. We do have a choice in the matter. And so for me, it's about bringing that consciousness into the conversation, is to know that, yes, you do have the choice to not vote on this product, to take your dollar elsewhere, and to empower a paradigm that will account for indigenous communities, for the welfare of forests and the organisms that are inimitable, that live in there, that we're taking for granted across the board, and therefore wiping off the face of the planet. We're extinguishing countless living beings out of their existence, out of the paradigm that we live in, this tapestry of life that we are a part of, because we think we're apart from it. And so all of that is what needs to get reframed. And for that to happen, we have to go through the growing pains of it. And I mean that both on a corporate level and on a consumer level. And so with the company I'm currently working on, first we're going to work on capturing the information that we need to ascertain how these shifts can truly happen while reducing the pain points, while reducing the friction that we would feel, right? So how can we overcome these insurmountable challenges, both from a brand perspective and a consumer perspective, but in a way that feels less painful? And if we can work through those pain points together and address it in a way that feels more effortless and at ease, to do the right thing is easy upon us, we're more likely to participate. So that's really what I want to cultivate, is an ecosystem that allows and fosters people and brands to make those commitments without feeling like they're giving up, you know, the sky and the earth they stand on.
Yeah, it's really important, because one thing I'm really a champion of is conscious living. I don't really care how you live, but we need to be more aware of what we're doing and the impact that has in the world. And buying these $3 t-shirts or $2 chickens, not thinking that as you said, the cost is elsewhere to save me a few dollars. You know, I am by purchase funding slavery. I am by purchase depleting the environment that I care so much about. So we do need to do this with awareness and with knowing that it's not a time to blame and hate ourselves or the companies. We all need to, together, we created this paradigm, as you said, we need to together start building the other one and acknowledge, you know, it will take time. It will cost more potentially, but the payoff in the future is far greater positively if we do it now together.
And for some reason also, what I meant by like in reaching for the sky, like do not give up, that is that we think ambition is tethered to these, having these lofty visions, right? But just because you're doing the right thing doesn't mean you can't scale. It doesn't mean that you cannot make money. It's like we somehow tether the idea of making money as being separate or divorced from the planet, the people, and everything that's tangible. It's sort of its own little etheric entity that is doing whatever it feels like without any accountability to the material world it is a part of and is taking from on a daily basis. So I think, you know, the entire framing of what we consider success, what we consider progress, what we consider growth, what we consider monetarily viable as return on investment, all those terminologies need to turn into things that are conscious and willing to show responsibility about the impacts that those terms can have when they're done without awareness, when they're executed out of the negligence and blind spots they've been executed through thus far, because it's not working, it hasn't worked, and we need to shift. It's like the time has come, and it's, if we don't do it now, we're going to lose what little remains. You know what I mean? We've already eroded so extensively into the fabric of existence. If we don't do this, we're not even self-preserving. We're not intelligent enough to save ourselves. And that's what it comes down to, really. Are we intelligent as a species? Because we keep claiming we are, but we're not acting in a way that actually honors that need for self-preservation even.
Yeah.
Because we're acting against our own well-being and against the systems that we're utterly dependent on. So yeah, so I think we do need to shift out of thinking that we're apart from and go back into the fold of we are a part of. And that's going to require us to realign a lot of things that we do and consider business as usual.
Yeah. So, I mean, the question that's burning is, how do we do this? And I'm talking about an individual consumerism level, but then also on that macro organizational level as well.
Right. I think the primary thing we would need to look at is where are things really not working? I mean, we haven't made enough of a clear study, because oftentimes it's easier to paint out the symptoms in very big headlines and make those the things that will be a spectacle when you get behind it and rally as a solution, right? So if I say I'm cleaning out the oceans, I'm collecting all the plastic debris that's floating on the surface, makes great headlines, but it doesn't reduce the source of how much plastic we put out into the world anyway per year. And over 275 million metric tons of plastic is being produced every year. So what does it matter if there's a vessel out there cleaning up the oceans, because all of this is going to end back in the river systems and go back into the oceans again. So once again, you know, I think if we make a clear study of what, like, it's almost like what the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, you know, and it keeps going back and forth. So it's like, oh yeah, I'll clean the oceans on the side, but this hand will keep producing more of the problem. So we can't be doing the guns and butter model anymore. We can't say that we're going to fuel the problem set while also dealing with the solution. We have to look at how can we all be part of the solution, which means stop being part of the problem. You know, and I think Einstein said this most beautifully. He was like, you cannot solve for the problems in the world from the same consciousness that gave rise to them. And we keep thinking that that's possible. We're like, we can stay in the comfort zone, but still be part of the transformation that needs to occur. And I'm like, that's just not possible. It's not possible in your personal life when it comes to how you show up for yourself and for the people in your life. It's not possible on a mass systematic scale that involves a paradigm shift. You know, it has to happen in a manner where we truly take stock of what is not working and stop doing it. Just stop it. Like, we cannot keep doing that and do this too. We have to stop this guns and butter model. And that's really what it comes down to. And that requires everybody working in unison. And I mean that in terms of policymakers, in terms of the legislative models that are being put out there, in terms of how these lawmakers ensure that there's accountability every step of the way for both corporations and consumers. And then again, consumers, the public, taking stock of the fact that they have enormous power. And that power has been stripped from them through advertising and through marketing that has skewed what we think is our role in all of this. So we just show up as buyers, as mindless buyers, and that's kind of what they want to position and puppeteer us into. But that's not who we are. You know, we have a huge say in whether something even exists tomorrow or not. And we've seen that time and again when people have rallied against something, when there's been a movement against something. We're able to take a strong position and say, no, enough is enough. And I think we need to be aware of that, the power of that voice, and be able to exercise that will more consciously towards everything that has to stop now. So that's really what my platform is going to enable people to do, is to say no and enough is enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And I very rarely go to supermarkets, but I went to one this weekend, and It saddens me because we're given this entire frame of 30 or 50 choices, but they're all owned by the same one company. They're just different branded, different packaging. And I'm given the illusion that I'm actually, you know, choosing a bio product, but on the back of the ingredient list, and also, as I said, the core owner of the company, it's the same. So yeah, I think we as consumers need to be a bit more conscious in where we're buying from, that choice isn't 20 of the same with different colors, as well as the companies, to actually give us a genuine difference of choice by allowing us to, you know, to buy with our money what we want to see as a positive change.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you a question that's close to my heart, because as you know, I've got some events coming up, some challenges, and I'm using it as a way of promoting equal opportunities for women, because the more I'm looking, the less I see me reflected in leadership and roles in media, et cetera. What do you think the role of equal opportunities is in businesses to create this paradigm shift that we're so much needing?
Part of it is just conscious change happening on an internal level in each company, and being mindful of the population demographics being reflected within the firm. And if we make a conscious effort to commit to that, then you're doing it from the get-go. It's part of the company's culture. It's part of your vision, mission, philosophy, value system, and those core aspects of a company's architecture that should be in its founding principle. It shouldn't be something that you do retroactively. It shouldn't be something that you do to like get good PR and press. It's something you do because you really want to be mindful of the community that you're assimilating and participating in. So I think, you know, it just comes from an awareness of, hey, like, for instance, where is your company's headquarters located in? For me right now, even though I was a New Yorker, I'm currently located in Montana, and there is a huge Native American population here. I've already had conversations with local computing centers and with the universities to look at how many Native Americans are actually empowered in conversation into technology. You know, do they actually show up and want to be, and are they given the opportunities at all? And they should be. So that's something you just have to touch in early and know the pulse of what's happening. And if it is something that other people are also conscious of, you can work with this community to just discern how you can best onboard and offer the opportunities that are currently missing in the market space. So I think that's something, whether it comes to Indigenous tribes, whether it comes to women in the workforce, I think that's another thing I would speak to is I personally love working with women, and I want to offer every woman every opportunity I can. I know there can be a drawbridge effect out there. I've personally experienced it where previous generations of women felt threatened by a younger woman coming into the fold because they feel either that we're going to compete for attention, compete for whatever other aspects. And so then they pull up the drawbridge and prevent you from crossing the moat. And I think, you know, I don't want to do that because I think up and coming women, I don't think there's such a thing as competition, first of all. And that's also the part of why I make opportunities available for everyone, is because everyone can show up only as they particularly can, given their life exposure, given their skill sets, experiences, maturity, sensibilities as a human being, orientation to things based on who they are at a very core level. So it is incredibly personal how you show up professionally. And I'm very mindful of that. So even in my job applications, when I put it out there, I'm looking at the development of a human being and how that orients to the company's culture. So if you're seeing it in such a deep level and you're truly mindful of the human beings you're onboarding, and you're not looking at it through AI or IA and saying, hey, you know, this is a quick filtering mechanism, all these personality types fit with my understanding of what this job's task models are, and therefore this is the right fit for this job, right? But that's not what you're looking at. I'm looking at, is this human being the right fit for this culture? And therefore they will consciously apply themselves in as many ways as possible. And that's the beauty of startup culture as well, is when you're in early stage startup, people have to wear multiple hats. You can't just be one thing. You take hats off over time, but and start having expertise within one particular expression or title. But in the beginning, you're doing everything you can to keep this ship afloat, you know? And so what matters more than is that the person is capable of self-regulating, that they're capable of handling stress, that they're capable of being divergent yet convergent. You know, can they go back and forth between the two? Are they able to go macro, micro? And those aspects of flexibility, adaptability, and willingness and availability of self is more important to the success of the effort than looking at it from the perspective of, is this person extroverted? Are they good at judgment over perception? Are they better at thinking instead of feeling? And I want an automaton running a desk job. But that's how we've approached even the market space. And it's interesting to see, you know, I was watching a documentary about personality types and about how AI is now filtering out job applicants through the sieve of facial recognition, like how you express yourself while you're answering personality questions, to see and evaluate if a human being can be, you know, assessed before you onboard them. So you can preemptively say that this is not the right fit because they don't have the right emotions or can't emote in the way that you think they should be. And that's such rubbish, because that's not a whole human being. If we were just our facial expressions, and also all of those things are so accustomed to the culture you've been raised in, you might express an emotion based on what you've seen that emotion expressed as in your childhood and your upbringing. And it's also so limiting. It's such a limiting belief to think that a person can only show up as that for the rest of their life in perpetuity. It doesn't allow them to grow. It doesn't allow them to find greater expression of self through evolution, through transformation. That is not what I stand for. And I think more companies out there need to be more mindful of the kind of technologies they employ, even on the onboarding process, and stop looking at humanity as commodity. We're not commodities. We're living, thinking, feeling, complex beings that need to be accounted for on a very deep level. And the fact that we're not even able to make room for our own kind, what capacity do we have? What space do we have to allow for expression of other living beings to find expression in this world, right? So if I can't even make room for the Native American in my backyard and another woman in my backyard, then how on earth am I going to care about wolves in my backyard? It comes from the same space of awareness and stewardship. Like, you have to be able to think bigger and be in it for the right reasons. So yeah, when does that conversation start? At the outset, not later when it looks good for your PR to do the right thing, so to speak. And I put that in quotation marks, but like, yeah, people often say they're doing the right thing, but they're doing it to cover their ass, or they're doing it to, you know, earn points, earn favor in the market space. And that's very manipulative. It's not with the right intention and orientation in mind or at heart.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And diversity and inclusion, D&I, is a big thing at the moment. And I feel it's a tick list for quite a few people, and missing the point behind the ethos of what we're doing. This isn't about, you know, tokenism. This is about transformation and long-lasting change to allow up.
Oh, I don't know how many times people come up to me and they're like, oh, you would look good on the board, or you would look good here because you fit the quota. You know, like I fit the bill of being diverse enough, you know, but I'm still really well-educated, blah, blah, blah. They say all these things. And honestly, I peg it to ignorance. So I don't take it personally. I'm like, because for me, I'm not just my education. I'm not just the way I look. I'm not the way I even think or feel on a given day, because all of those are ephemeral. Tomorrow I could wake up and be completely different. Or if I have Alzheimer's, I'm not any of those things. And then who am I, right? Because you have to know that you're more than just your personality expression on any given day, because all of those can be taken away. And then who are you? If everything is gone, then who are you? Because you're still you. And that cannot be replaced. The essence and presence of you cannot be replaced. So I just, you know, I think there's greater significance to being human than any one of these stupid touch points that people peg as identity labels, peg as quota systems, peg as ways or a vocabulary through which we can say, this is who you are, and that's why you matter. Rubbish. You matter by virtue of being, by just the intrinsic value of you is just for being you, and for being present, for being alive, for being part of this larger fabric and matrix of existence. So if the deeper consciousness of appreciation is not there for another being, then you've missed the point of life, you know, in which case you can't value another person. You can't value a plant. You don't see the intrinsic value of everything for being what it is, just for virtue of being. And then that's why you have these pecking orders. You think like animals don't matter as much as people do. And only certain types of people matter. You know, women don't matter as much as men do. And then we prioritize men and give them greater leverage and opportunities. And then there's a level of entitlement built into the system, algorithmic bias built into the system, whether it's tech or whether it's in everyday life. There are so many things that skew why the modalities in play at present are already in disfavor of the vast majority, right? But we call them the minority, and then we suppress their voice, and then we silence them as opposed to allowing them to find expression to make our systems more resilient. That's what diversity does. It makes things resilient, and people don't want to understand that. And even in trying to be inclusive, they're still ignorant because they're doing it for the wrong reasons in the wrong ways. And to educate that sensitivity cannot come from rallying against wanting greater awareness of an identity label. That's why I don't think it's necessarily beneficial for any race, any ethnicity group, anybody out there who has a strong identity affiliation to say that this identity needs to be further recognized by the system. What you actually want is an equal playing field where every identity is fostered equally. And for us to approach it through the inclusive lens opposed to empowering one at the cost of the other constantly, because then it still pegs a system where there is, you know, a hierarchy in play. Mm. And you're trying to climb up the same ladder that hasn't worked since the dawn of time. So let's get rid of that ladder and like think about this differently. It's not a pyramid system. Let's not climb up the pyramid that has not worked, because it has thus far not empowered the voices that should be empowered.
Yeah.
And it's kept a select few at the top. So I think, you know, I don't subscribe to identity. I subscribe to true equity, which means it cannot be about any one identity, an offsetting identity that has not found expression thus far. Because in offset, like, but I do think what we need to do in being mindful and looking at sort of the economic, and this is the other thing, people confuse things to be systemic something, right? So like it could be systemic racism, systemic, but it's not that. It's more to do with the economics behind the situation. Those who do not have as much voice, do not have as much leverage, as many opportunities, have already been socioeconomically repressed and depressed. And therefore, they have less access to the kind of education that would allow them to break out of that modality of being impoverished, not having access. So you continue to have less access over time. And then you become the working underclass, right? So I think what we need to be empowering is economic equity, equality, as opposed to looking at it in terms of identity labels, if that makes sense. So I'm more about creating, I don't care how a person looks or where they come from. if you have the work ethic, have and are showing up as a human being and have done the self-work to be present for life, then I think you have tremendous value to offer to what's happening in the world around, because you're no longer bringing your bias, you're no longer bringing your baggage to the table. You're bringing all of your being to the table, which has exponential expression available to it. So, you know, less baggage, more being. That's what I'm about. And that's what I try to empower both professionally and personally.
Yeah, that's great. And I work a lot with leaders to educate them to see through what they see in front of them. As you said, I'm not a woman. I'm not white. I am Kate Strong. And that brings a lot of personality to it. So it's about educating people to see through that. So they're not ticking the tick box, but they're also not hiring to suit a certain agenda as well, or the bias that they have.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, when once you've made a state of stasis within you, where you're centered within your essence of being, then you're not as vacillated by people's ignorance. Because people say ignorant things to me all the time. And I don't take it personally, because it's not about me. It's about them, that they don't know the world better than they do. And they're speaking in the way that they're speaking about it. And they don't even mean it with any malice. They don't even know they're saying the wrong thing, right? Sometimes they just say what they say. And so I'm just like, okay, I make fun of it. I have a sense of humor about it. And I'm like, it is a great time to be a quota. Like, I'm just like hitting boxes left, right, and center, you know? And I was like, I don't care if that's how they see it. It's like, it's still something we can talk about. And having a sense of humor about it, I'm able to bring them into the conversation in a comfortable way. And we can make fun of it and move through it and come to the other side where we're more on the same page than we were 2 minutes before that.
Yeah.
So I think just let go and stop taking it personally and have a sense of humor about it. I know it's hard to do because some people feel extremely wronged and violated and taken for granted, abused, repressed by the system that's been in place. But the only way, like it's what Martin Luther King said, you know, the only way to shine light into this is to not come hate against hate, you know, but rather to shine love, like do the opposite force, not the thing that has been in place already. And oftentimes we lose sight of that and we try to fight darkness with darkness instead of bringing light into the equation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to change out of tit for tat mentality. And just because somebody has behaved poorly doesn't mean you have to behave poorly. Like, rise above and be present for the largest, most inclusive expression of self that's for you and for the other. And make room, hold space for the other, even if they're being absolutely ignorant. And I think the greatest change makers in the world have done that, even if it has come at the cost of them at some point. You know, they've risen above. And that's what brought about the true shift in a non-violent, peaceful capacity after all of the violence. So the ultimate tipping point happens through peace, happens through an inclusive moment of being a stakeholder that is conscious of all stakeholders and not being a shareholder that's fighting against other shareholders to get a one-up in the system.
Yeah.
And that, I would say that whether it was Gandhi, whether it was Martin Luther King, any of these big visionaries have come at it from that stakeholder perspective and not from a shareholder perspective. A shareholder mentality is not just limited to corporations. It's also in how we show up with racism and everything else. Because then you're saying this set of people, this shareholder has to find greater expression, even if it's the cost of all the other shareholders who have benefited in the past. Let's suppress them now and let's find greater expression. That's not the right modality to move forward with, because it's perpetuating the same paradigm with a different imprint on it, a different label on it, but it's still the same wash on the underlying surface. And so I think, you know, that's underlying the surface. And I think what's the most important thing there is, like, if we're really looking at source and we're looking at that deep transformation I've been talking about, it has to happen on a root level, at a core level, which means we're not going to keep doing the same thing in a different way. So stop putting a new facade on the internal architecture that has just never changed. We don't need a new facade. What we need is a new architectural system to be built out differently and to be built out in a way that's actually promoting equity instead of saying that it's going to. So yeah, that's where I stand on that.
Yeah. And it's great to know there's people like you, because I know you're not alone in challenging it, but also offering that alternate way of being. So yeah, I'm very excited to see what will happen with your tech startup in the not too distant future.
Yeah, me too. Because I'm learning every day on the go, and it's so exciting to see how people show up for it just by virtue of you being more mindful and inclusive and supportive of their well-being. You know, and I'll say this, and it's like, because not enough companies actually invest in their employees in a holistic way.
And if you were to look at it as conscious capitalism, without giving it the B Corp label or any of those like needs to say, I am endorsing myself as being fair trade, endorsing myself with another identity label to say that I will do the right thing, you know, because if that's the only way you're going to step up and do the right thing, then you're not capable of it without the label, right? And so I'm very mindful of like, why do we need to embrace labels to just show up in the right way? That should just be how we're all showing up. Like all companies should be for benefit of the public, for the benefit of planet. Why do we have to be B Corp to do that? Why do you need to segregate and create a marginalized label to show that you're doing the right thing in the world as a corporation, right? So, I get why it was created, but I think it's another, I don't know, conduit that needs to be explored to see if it's actually promoting source shift or if it's just making a new collective that is operating within the existing paradigm and is never actually shifting the paradigm. So, you know, I like John McKay's book a lot, Conscious Capitalism. He talks extensively about this. And that's the guy who came up with Whole Foods. And I thought it was brilliant that he's so mindful of enlisting anyone who's oppositional and brings in a perspective that is runs counter to what the institution was thinking a minute before. And he's like, so instead of saying, hey, PETA is fighting against me right now because they think I'm not sourcing my meat in the right way, or some of my meats are not coming from the right farms. Instead of saying that they don't know what they're talking about, or silencing their voice, or like saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to listen to this, it's just rubbish, I'm going to do what I know is right anyway. He's like, I just went out of my board meeting, met with the people who were rallying outside, and asked them what was actually going on and how can we make you part of the conversation. Enlist everybody as a stakeholder. Even the people who seem opposed to you are actually fighting for your betterment, if you really look at it that way, you know. And I do that on a personal level. Like the worst boyfriends I've had, the worst situations in my life that has utterly broken me apart has still given me greater access to me and made me more resilient, more tenacious, more self-aware, and more whole than I was 5 minutes before that. And that wound up happening, right? So be okay with things that challenge you and challenge the status quo, because moment of being challenged is the moment through which you grow out of what you've been. And I think the more willing you are to allow those conversations to be a part of your everyday narrative, to be upended daily, to have the willingness to be on the growing edge, to be on the transformational edge, allows for you to find the most inclusive expression you possibly can. And that can occur in a company as well. It's not just about the individual. So I think both happen in the same way.
Yeah.
And we often tend to lose sight of that.
Yeah, very true. Well, I could carry on listening and talking with you for many hours, but I do know you've got a business to create. Is it possible I could ask you some questions about your perception on the first one is about what's the one skill you think leaders need today?
The one skill I think leaders need would be, I would say compassion. You know, I think compassion is such a huge missing part of showing up, because thus far, and not too long ago, I think even 2-3 years ago, most of the CEOs that were surveyed were sociopaths or psychopathic on the scale of being those two, you know, and I was just so appalled that there was such little humanity and that was looked up to as a yardstick for success. The less human you were, the more efficient you were, and therefore you were able to deliver for the bottom line, no matter how the organizational cogs were performing. And they were seen as cogs. They were not seen as individuals that had to find expression. So it was very much shareholder. It was very much about the vein of looking at it through a very sterile lens of, are you getting the thing done? You're looking at the deliverables, but not the person who's delivering. And so, you know, it's just something that I remember being so taken aback by just maybe 4-5 years ago. That was the primary conversation we were having about CEOs in the world. And then now I'm looking at just a market shift about how we care about, you know, how our staff is feeling. Are they being fostered? Are there programs that are allowing for their families to find greater inclusion and expression within the ecosystem of the company? And are the pets involved? You know, how are we accounting for the pets? Like, there are just different conversations happening now that were completely missing earlier. And I think the leaders of today's world, if you truly want to account for sustainable development, if you want to account for the largest expression of that entity and everything it can enlist and have a footprint hold around, you would have to be truly compassionate. You would have to truly listen, be an active listener, be willing to show up for people. You know, and my team is really small right now, But when they have a problem, I make the time, even if it's emotionally draining for me, which at times it is because I am introverted. I can be extroverted, but I recharge on my own. I need that time alone. But when people are in a state of pain, duress, distress, I show up for them. I listen to them. I want to give them the opportunity to do better than they did. Even if they misbehaved 10 minutes ago, or an hour ago, I want them to know that there's somebody in their corner rooting for them to do better, to show up for themselves in a way that they haven't had the opportunity to until that moment that I showed up for them. So I think fostering is a huge part of it, giving people chances by, so long as they're willing to show accountability and integrity, right? So I think I tell them, hey, these are the commitments I need from you to be able to trust you again. You've eroded trust by behaving this way, but if you will go seek the help, if you'll go for therapy, if you'll go do what needs to be done to show up in the best expression of self for you, for your own sake, for your own well-being, then you're automatically going to do right by anything else you come in contact with, including this company. So of course, I'll onboard you again if you're in that right energy space, if you're in the right alignment within your own being, right? Because who you are is how you're going to affect the lives around you, and hurt people hurt people. So if you're wounded and you're affected and you're a hot mess, you're going to make a hot mess of the life around you, you know, and that's what's happening in the world. Like, the reason why everything is in a state of devastation and denudation is because most of us are denuded within and devastated within, and we don't know how to resolve our inner landscape. And therefore we're affecting the outer landscape utterly. We've taken from everything because we feel so void within. And so I think, you know, systematically making that not the, that not be the sort of silo through which you operate, where you continue to take and sort of filling the void within, that's what leaders need to be doing right now. Help people fill up within, so then they show up and take less from the world around and can actually foster as opposed to erode and extract and exploit, because that's not what you should be doing within your workforce, and that's not what you should be doing with the world around in terms of natural resources. So stop looking at things as commodities, stop looking at things as resources. Start seeing yourself as part of the equation and be present for everything and everyone. Like, you have to be present for it.
Yeah, completely. And it starts, as you said, with compassion. So that's a great start for most leaders to reflect on themselves.
Yeah. And I would say, I would add one more thought to that, which is a lot of us look at compassion as an external act. You know, we can be compassionate to another, but we don't know how to exercise to our own self. And so there's very little self-acceptance. You can be I've seen people be incredibly harsh to their own self. They judge themselves. They're incredible. And I'm one of them. I've been there. You know, be very self-critical, constantly put yourself under scrutiny, under the lens, because you're like, I could do better. I should have done better. I should have known better. But you don't, when you don't, and have forgiveness for self, have self-acceptance, have self-love, have self-compassion, because what you do to you is also how you're going to end up ultimately showing up for the world and doing to the world. And so, do unto self as you would want done on that, like, as you would intend to do unto others, because oftentimes we can be kind to others, but we're not actually kind because we're not kind within. So I think, you know, really look at from how you show up for you and then show up for others in the same vein.
Yeah, completely. Starts with self. I actually used to carry a picture of myself when I was 2. I was like, treat me as I would that little girl, because she was really cute. And so,
I love that.
And what do you follow more? Is it logic or intuition?
I am very logical. I'm an odd oddity because I can manage between both left and right. So I can be very creative, very imaginative, and very logical, sequential, and business oriented, like very academic in how I approach something, very systematic in how I approach something. But ultimately, when I'm making critical, large decisions and taking those leaps of faith, that comes from intuition. It doesn't come from, because you can know all the data, and you could still make a choice that you feel would be the right thing to do. And that rightness comes from some deeper space within you that it can't be quantified or qualified through rational expression. So I can't say, hey, this is exactly why I did it, but I knew this was the thing I had to do. So I think I do make a lot of intuitive calls when it comes to both professionally and personally. And especially with leaps of faith, that comes from intuition.
Yeah, that's very wise. I think there's a place for both. I don't see one camp outwinning the other, but
And I think a lot of people ignore or dismiss intuition for facts and don't have faith. But I think faith and fact have to live together. And any choice I make, I take risks, but I don't take dumb risks. I don't take blind risks. I do due diligence. I research the Mickey out of something I'm going to get behind. You know, so be smart, but you also be intuitive. I don't think, like you said, it's not mutually exclusive. But I definitely think a lot of the bigger things that people might make systematically as the only reasoning, like if you do pros and cons and then you say, that's the choice I'm going to go with, it may not be the right choice because there might be something that you have picked up on that's just nascent or subtle. And the subtleties find expression through intuition. So,
yeah.
And
I think also, I mean, logic comes from a different part of our brains. So intuition, we can't always formulate into language. So like you said, there's a nuance. We just don't feel it right, but we can't explain what it is. So I think it's very valid and we need to give it space and honor it as well.
And it's interesting because sometimes I would have done a call that's intuitive and I couldn't fully explain why I chose that choice. But later there would be something that comes up and I'm like, that's the factor I didn't know at the time, but felt aligned or called to or knew on some level, right? But it's a spidey sense. It's a thing that you can't quantify or qualify, but you knew something that would take this down the right way and it was the right judgment call, but it was made out of an intuitive space, a perceptive space. So that's an interesting.
Yeah. And so how do you deal with when you make a call and it's wrong, so to speak? How do you deal with failure and not achieving those goals?
I think failure happens and flailing. Both of those things happen because you have gone into something without, at that time, not knowing everything that needed to be known to make a better call, right? And that's okay because the only way you get to a space where you are informed and know how to make a better call is by going through that learning curve. So I take it as life lessons, like that which I feel called to that doesn't work out is the thing that I'm meant to learn through. And so those are my growth curve moments and I embrace them wholeheartedly because failure is such a great teaching, like whether relationships don't work out and I've taken massive leaps of faith on that front or whether it's business initiatives that I haven't worked out or product forecast that I haven't worked out. But also like there is no such thing as lasting failure. It feels like it hasn't worked in the moment. But if you apply yourself and you're problem solving and you learn from it, then you can actually keep iterating and fixing that, you know, towards being a better fit for whatever it was supposed to be, particularly in the professional sphere. Like when a product doesn't work, right? Like you can achieve product market fit by iterating or pivoting or just being innovative in how you approach the situation and not giving up. So I think part of it is also when do you quit and how do you quit and who are you quitting or what are you quitting? Because oftentimes in personal relationships, I have stayed in things longer than I needed to because I don't like quitting. And then the thing that I've quit is actually me, right? And then you wake up one day and you're like, wow, that was nothing but self-betrayal. Like, good to know that I stood by somebody else at the cost of self. And so I think like, you know, just having the constant awareness of knowing what it is that you're saying yes to and what it is you're saying no to. Because every yes comes with all these no's and every no comes with all these yeses. So like you have to know what the trade-offs are. And the more cognizant you are of that, the less likely it is to be a failure.
Yeah, that's really powerful that sometimes we're saying yes to somebody to our own detriment or to the no of us. Yeah. Very aware. And a question I'd like to ask is about what's the one step we can make to create this more equality for all within business as well as in our society as well?
I think being present is a huge part of it because if you are present for the context at hand, then you're adaptive, you're available, and you're able to change directions or assimilate as needed. You're responsive instead of being reactive, right? So if you've done the work and you're not bringing your own bias and baggage to the situation at hand, then you're more likely to, through the state of being, be effectively responsive to what needs to get done. And it won't be a scramble. It won't be desperate. It won't be reactive, it would be proactive. You'd be one step ahead because you're already at lockstep with what's actually happening around you. So I think that it's truly about being present. It's not bringing your own rubbish onto the plate and saying, hey, I have this very strong whatever agenda, like feminist agenda, whatever title you want to put on it, you know, and then that skews your fabric of expression already towards favoring one thing over another, which means you're not available to the whole. And I'm very keen on being as inclusive and as available to the whole and not put so many filters that prevent me from accessing that whole. So I really want to look at things from a sort of three-dimensional holistic perspective, as opposed to coming at it with a preconceived notion or a pre-existing agenda.
Yeah, that's very wise. And why should we care about equal opportunities?
Because what makes the effort, the expression of society, of life on Earth, more resilient. It makes it have greater expression in terms of it takes into account more perspectives, more inputs. There's just different sieves, different conduits through which information is flowing into the final output, right? So I really value that. Like, I like different age groups being around me. I like having different cultures around me. I get stifled if I don't have, you know, at least a few people who don't speak the language that I speak, because I like being in that discomfort of not having everything happen in one vernacular and one cultural motif, because that is so limited. And there's such beauty, such warmth, such just, it's so gorgeous. Like, it's magic, right? Because like when you see the heart and soul of someone from South Africa, or like, you know, in the Maasai warriors in Kenya, in the Serengeti, like there's just such a diversity of being that comes into expression. How can you not celebrate and foster that? How can you not want to see that be a part of your story? And I mean story as in like the collective story. To take that out of the equation, to make it more like one thing, is to lose out on that beauty, on that magic. And I can't put my finger on why it's magic, but it's like, that's the same wonder I feel in nature. When you see just the sheer diversity of life expression, it's something to be marveled and preserved. So I think that's why equality matters, because all these things are inimitable and they're unique, and that uniqueness makes them absolutely worth preserving for posterity, to have it for the next generation to encounter, because it would be such a tragedy to lose the textiles that they're capable of coming out, the colors that they orient themselves around, why, the whys that they show up with, you know, because critical reasoning is different from culture to culture. So my why is not the same as your why. And there's beauty behind that. So
yeah, wonderful. And to everyone listening, what one message would you like to leave us with?
The one message I would leave people with is that each person has tremendous power by virtue of being who they are. And what you have to offer to this world doesn't matter your training, doesn't matter your skill sets, education, your personality type. Like, let go of all of those labels. Just as by virtue of being who you are, you have so much to offer. So don't let anyone make you feel less than, because that's just not the reality. That's just how you choose to believe them. And that's coming from some sort of distorted understanding of self. But if you truly saw you, you're just extraordinary, and nobody should make you feel less than extraordinary. So don't be afraid to show up as who you are and to contribute for the whole and care about the whole. And as a stakeholder, as a person who's present in today's planet, you as an individual should care for everything else you share time and space with. So show up as a true stakeholder, take responsibility, and care about the world that you live in.
Yeah, wow. Well, thank you so much, Asha, for your time today. This conversation has been a rich tapestry of my mind just popping like popcorn at the moment with inspiration to, as you say, just turn up, be myself, commit to a brighter future, and make sure that I'm doing the right thing. We all know what that is. And it's about time that we start putting our action and our voices behind that as well. And
absolutely.
For everyone listening, I think the best website for you is ashaj.com, but I do know you have about 100 projects on the go as well.
So. Yeah, I have yokeandanchor.com. That's like the company I started with when I started working with collaboration group brands. But the tech company I'm giving rise to is Hive and Hamlet. And that'll have products out soon, like probably by June. So once we're up and running, but keep tabs on me on social media. I'm always posting things, and, you know, like, have a sense of humor, because I'm definitely not always on appropriate, or I tend to have a non-PC sense of humor. So like, you know, have a sense of humor when you interact with me. Yeah. Don't take life too seriously.
Yeah, I definitely will. I'll be sharing all of this in the links as well. So please, everyone, connect to Asha J, see what's going to be happening in the world, and get active and make this world, as you said, a more careful, carefree, compassionate vacation for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kate. Have a lovely day.
Thank you.
If you like to support the work I do, then please subscribe, rate, and comment on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere else you found this podcast. And if you are ready to step up and into your greatness, then please connect with me. send me an email, kate@katestrong.global, and start your journey today. Thank you. And until the next episode, keep in positive action.